Hello and welcome to the Bot Nirvana podcast, where we dive into all things software automation. I'm your host, Nandan Mullakra. While I'm not podcasting, I write articles on nandan.info. I hope you enjoy the show. Let's get right into it. We have Madhu Raman, the worldwide head for intelligent automation at Amazon Web Services today. Madhu and team have been growing the intelligent automation and AI-based workloads at AWS. These workloads can be deployed on AWS Cloud along with other core AWS services. In this chat, we discuss the AWS workloads like process assessment, low-code, RPA, and ML. Madhu also shares their exciting vision for the space and much more. Let's listen in. Hi, Madhu. Welcome to the Bot Nirvana podcast. It's great having you today. Can we start with a quick personal intro?
Sure, Nandan. Delighted to be on your podcast show. Thank you for having me. Madhu Raman here, worldwide head for Amazon Web Services Intelligent Automation. We refer to intelligent automation on AWS as IA. And IA serves 22 commercial industries worldwide. Personal side, I live in Massachusetts, been at AWS almost 4.5 years, and previously headed Verizon Enterprises Ideation Services globally.
Thanks, Madhu. So can you tell us more about your IA automation program and how it's helping your AWS customers?
Yes. So IA is focused on the mission to enable optimized value from human capital for AWS customers. So it's not about technology, right? It's about optimizing the value from human capital.
Okay.
And importantly, intelligent automation on AWS workloads, or simply IA workloads, these are digital transformation implementations that can be incrementally introduced. And Nandan, when you think about IA, it is useful to kind of think about three broad buckets of workload capabilities on AWS. Mm-hmm. The first we like to think about is process assessment. And Nandan, you're very familiar with process assessment, but let me just share a little bit, unpack that for you from an IA perspective.
Okay.
Process assessment helps answer process-specific performance and compliance-oriented questions, right, for cloud, edge, or even on-premise processes, right? What processes do people really follow? Not what they tell that they do, right, but what do they actually do, and where and why do people or machines deviate from a standard process? So these are the kinds of things you're focused on from a process assessment perspective. And the important thing is that the technology obviously derives its information not by talking to people, but actually interrogating the logs, the event logs, and analysis of human screen-based activities. And this is aided by AI, artificial intelligence. And these workloads focus on business process improvement outcomes by supporting identification of process flows, discovery of bottlenecks within these flows, and actually the optimization of these flows. And these are all available for our customers to try now on AWS to automate their process assessment. So that's the first, you know, bucket, if you will, right? The second set of IA workloads are what we like to think of as low-code, no-code automation. In particular, low-code application platform, or abbreviation we typically use is LCAP, LCAP technology. Now, LCAP accelerates solution portfolio assembly for all of our intelligent automation on AWS. It enables very rapid development cycles, reduced tactical dependence on IT, and it actually empowers our business users to co-drive digital transformation. And this is aligned with IT governance. That's the important piece, right? It's not like somebody off going and doing something on their own, but it's really associated with IT governance.
Right.
The typical savings that we find in application development effort with LCAP is around 72 to 85%. And this is a typical outcome for first-time LCAP adopters. And it's driven by, you know, the ability to deliver on business requirements much, much faster with fewer resources. The workflows that are built from these, they are really configured really quickly. But the big point is that it requires a tremendous level of enterprise integration to other software, anywhere from 70 different applications to almost 175 business applications, and doing that with drag and drop. The third and last bucket, Nandan, is, of course, I think your favorite, right? RPA, what we call digital workers.
Right.
And that's because this is RPA plus AI and ML. So we don't just talk about pure RPA. We talk about RPA with AI and ML and other supporting services among our 200 plus feature services on AWS. And these workloads, when they're deployed, they provide an automated team member, right? Typically, right, a virtual employee trained to carry out a specific business process. And that includes exception handling because of the AI portion and the other portions of this, just like any human employee. So our vision for digital workers, it has really come from working backwards from our customer needs. It is to deliver like a very simplified business process experience enabled by digital workers. And we really see that, you know, as going through three stages, as being assessed, you know, what needs to be done, these workflows being assembled, put together, right? And then automated. And all this done by our customers in a very, very fast period of time. And so that pretty much emphasizes science of the doable for us. Back to you, Nandan.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Madhu. That's really impressive. And, you know, this, I see that you have a complete package out there, starting with process assessment. I'm thinking process mining, and then, you know, BPM, I'm thinking low code, and along with the RPA and AI ML too. So is this a ecosystem built out of partner products and AWS products?
Yeah, surely. So I'd first like to clarify one thing. We think of this as a community, right?
Okay.
And it is a community of basically the best in breed of what can happen when you look at things from a customer perspective. That is, customers have very specific needs, right? Mm-hmm. So for example, when you look at the interesting automation use cases, right? There are use cases associated with Office of the CFO. These are really top of mind for our customers. And then associated with that, right, we also interestingly see the concept of a non-person entity or an MPE running a process. So this non-person entity is, right, that is somebody instead of a human, it's a digital bot, et cetera, running these workflows. And there are unique challenges for this type of workflow automation. So when you kind of look at all of these three things pulled together, right, the community, you asked us, is it obviously, it takes the 200 plus AWS services, mixes and matches, you know, puts them together. Think of that as a giant recipe for any type of workflow to basically satisfy the customer need. Endpoint protection is a basic need. And so, you know, you would see us marrying the endpoint protection kind of capabilities that are available, not only with partners, but obviously organically within AWS. And then using that to secure automated workflows. And that is a very important focus for us. And I can tell you a lot of other things associated with use cases. You know, for example, customer support, another area of big IA adoption. And we see that by industry, it's very, very different, depending on which industry we talk about.
Right.
And when you look at these three areas, process assessment, digital workers, and low-code automation, and you see these three things coming together, there are various examples. So fundamentally, you need to have that mixing pot of what is available that can be deployed right now. How do we mix that with customizable kind of services? How do we configure those services? But most importantly, try to give accelerated value for the customers so they can immediately start using. So we introduced this concept of a proof of value, Nandan, a proof of value trial period, where the customer is able to actually go and prove out their KPI, prove out their values for their use cases, and really try and see if that makes sense for them, right? Can they actually go and show that they're able to do something with their business KPIs within a 30-day period? So that has also been a very important piece of this.
Oh, okay. So, and is that like a free trial period they can do for 30 days?
Yes. So typically for AWS customers, there's a 30-day period where they can try our solutions, et cetera.
Okay.
And you're right, it's a mix of both. And so they can try these solutions. They are usually supported during this time period. And then, you know, the outcome of that, they are able to adopt that based on the results.
So you have a great package for digital transformation, right? So, you know, just from, and you are dealing with multiple types of AWS customers. So from what you've seen so far, what's been the big benefits that your customers are seeing?
Yeah, so there are two ways you can look at it in terms of benefits. There are the benefits from the intelligent automation itself.
Right.
And then there are the benefits from the RPA progression to the cloud, right?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of benefits from the RPA progression to the cloud, the second one, let me take that one first, and then let me get to the actual benefits of the intelligent automation workflow. Does okay. that work?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. So we observe five reasons, right, for operating intelligent automation in the AWS cloud. And each of these specifically influences what we see as a digital worker progression to the cloud, i.e. the RPA plus AIML and all those services, right? And the first one is agility. So AWS lets customers quickly spin up resources as they need them, right? Deploying hundreds or even thousands of servers in minutes. This means that our customers can very quickly develop and roll out new applications. And it also means, right, that the teams can experiment and innovate more quickly and frequently with their intelligent automation workloads. What is particularly interesting is if an experiment fails, right, and some of these will fail, you can always deprovision those resources without any risk.
Right.
And that is kind of, you know, an important point. The second reason, of course, is cost savings. If you look at how people end up moving to the cloud, almost always, right, the conversation starter ends up being cost. And AWS allows the customers to trade capital expenses for variable expenses and only pay for IT as they consume. And the third reason is elasticity. Customers used to over-provision to ensure they had enough capacity to handle their operations at the peak level, right? And now they can provision the amount of resources they actually need, knowing they can instantly scale up or down, right? Mm-hmm. And with the, you know, especially the past 2 years of the pandemic, that's important, not just scaling up, but also scaling down, right, with the needs of the business, which reduces costs and improves the customer's ability to meet those demands. Fourth reason, cloud allows customers to innovate faster, right? Because they can focus their highly valuable IT resources on developing applications. So here they can tap into those 250 plus services, featured services, very quickly while they're building their digital workflows. And so that is kind of very, very important because, you know, their businesses can basically, they can focus on what matters, right? And leave the undifferentiated heavy lifting of managing infrastructure and the data centers and those kind of things to us. The fifth, I would say, reason that we see and the final reason in terms of this progression is that AWS enables customers to deploy globally in minutes. So we have the concept of a region, which is a physical location, right, around the world where we cluster data centers. Mm-hmm. We call each group of logical data centers an availability zone. And customers can leverage these availability zones across many geographical regions worldwide. So basically, those are the reasons, right, that we see that, you know, the reasons that RPA progression, digital worker progression to the cloud is happening from a customer perspective. Now, the specifics of workflows, we do find anywhere from 20 to 60% cost reduction at a minimum 20% and going to almost 60%. And also about 50% in terms of operational effectiveness, increase, enhancement, for those processes which are targeted by these intelligent automation workflows. Okay. So this is tremendous. And that is really one of the major benefits of going for intelligent automation. The last piece I'd like to add to that is, again, this is all well and good, right? But does it take many months or, you know, years to get to that? Mm-hmm. The short answer is no. And what we are finding, right, is as you blend towards LCAP, low-code automation platforms, and you marry that into this context of digital workers and process assessment, we can actually cut the time down tremendously. And we are looking at days, literally, for pretty robust level of development. We are looking at weeks in terms of production deployment. And so this is really very amazing to us to see, you know, the science of the global becoming so well, I would say, supported by the industry.
Right. And, you know, I think that's the key thing, right? We are reducing the time to innovate and digitally transform because there's a huge need to move faster at the marketplace. And I think AWS is enabling that in a big way. So as one of the largest, or I would say the largest cloud provider, right? So do you think RPA would ultimately end up in the cloud?
So that's a, you know, something that we have thought about a lot, which is, what do we mean when we say RPA goes to the cloud, right? Mm-hmm. Do we mean the brain of the RPA, i.e. the controlling portion of what happens there? Do we mean the actual workflow itself? At the end of the day, work is going to occur, you know, on the cloud, on the edge, on-premise, right? Everywhere. Work is going to occur everywhere, right? That is the nature of work. But what about the brain? Will the brain sit in the cloud? Mm-hmm. And for the very reasons that I pointed out, right? Agility, cost saving, elasticity, right? Innovation, and basically the ability to deploy globally, right? All those five reasons, they drive the context of something like an RPA automatically into the cloud. Because that is logically the best place that a brain can reside if it is dealing with the edge or even on-premise kind of situations. And that's what we are discovering working with our customers, right? I got to say this, right? The whole low-code automation platform piece, which we are very excited about, and the process assessment piece, which seems to be supporting all of this, the intersection of these with digital workers, again, that is very much becoming something that is supported on the cloud. And that is very exciting to us because what that implies is that we are able to support more and more of our customer needs to provide them guidance on which processes are best for IA, right? In real time, right? Like to tell them like, hey, you should be moving this versus that, right? In terms of workflows. And that whole vision is if you can provide automated guidance on which processes are best for IA, based on what is running on the enterprise today, what if we can automatically create and use those process diagrams to generate automation workflows, right? What if we can customize these workflows with our 200 plus featured services by simple drag and drop? And finally, right, if you could enable these workflows to be executed by digital workers, which scale based on demand, all that is doable on the cloud. And so these are the customer-facing considerations we are very excited about. And we feel that, yes, these are things that will propel what we call RPA today into the cloud.
So, Madhu, you've been tracking these benefits from the program using KPIs attached to the digital workers. Can you share a bit about those KPIs?
Yeah, surely, Nandan. So, the key performance indicators, right? So, when we do this of trial with customers, what we find is our customers, by the way, the IA customers in particular on AWS, they are line of business folks, right? They are folks running the business. So typically, we have technical folks, right, working closely with AWS from the customer side. And these are actually line of business folks, very different in terms of what their focus and role is. And so their focus tends to be these KPIs, as you're pointing out. And it might vary all the way from something like an on time in full, i.e. in terms of supply and demand and being able to actually fulfill a request, right? All the way to just KPIs around how quickly you are able to deal with sales outstanding and other kinds of things that a sales organization deals with. Or it might deal with KPIs associated with returns, right? Or KPIs associated with defects on the assembly line, et cetera. And what we find is for our proof of value trials, we are not talking about simply straight through processing, which you and I are used to, right? I mean, that is what we talk about when you talk about RPA, automation, digital workers. It's like straight through processing. That is the amount of time that a digital worker doesn't require a human to actually intervene in the process. That doesn't really kind of, it translates into a KPI, but it doesn't really, you know, it's just a proxy for a KPI. It's not really the KPI itself. And what we are finding is that the customer really wants the KPI to be driving the workflow. So what is interesting about this is, so you're really looking at number of defects, for example, on an assembly line, and you're saying like, hey, if that is getting above a certain level, then some other process needs to be kicked off, or something else needs to happen, or somebody needs to be notified, et cetera. And you could put that organically as part of the workflow. But bottom line is, it is done where the person creating the workflow has thought through the KPI and done it. It's not the KPI itself which is actually creating the action. So imagine that you are able to actually enter what a KPI is for a process. And that in turn creates the baseline at which point the workflow reacts to what is happening. And then the workflow is basically self-healing, right? It corrects itself in terms of what is happening. Right. That is the future we see, where the KPI is driving the actual outcome of the workflow. And we believe that in order to do that, you need three things to come together. Again, same things that we talked about. You need the process assessment piece, because you need to know what the process is end to end. So you need that piece very much. You need the process flow. You need the digital worker itself that will do the actual actions, right? Whether it is a notification, whether it's kicking off another process, et cetera. And importantly, you need to be able to put all these together to actually get deployed. That means you have to be able to assemble these things. And therefore, that's where the low-code automation platform comes in. And so these three things have to be built together in order to do this. So we see a convergence of these three technologies, which would be a very different version than what we see today in the outside world for what we call RPA today.
Okay. And they would be driven by the KPIs, or I think what you're using KPI is for like the decision, so that the process can, I think, like you said, self-healing, or, doing the right things, right?
Yes, it is. It's the self-healing portion is the most important portion, because that is where most of the time is spent by the process.
Right.
Whereas today, the focus is on the STP, right? The straight through processing part, which is, here is the number, it's above 89%, and so it is acceptable for an IA flow. It is not necessarily about saying, hey, there is going to be so much wastage of inventory, right? And let us use that as the basis of driving. So you can do that. You can put that as part of the flow, but you have to actually figure that out and put that in. And the future will basically see that being the actual input versus being an output.
So just, staying in that vein, where do you think the whole intelligent automation space will evolve further? There is this hyper automation, them coming together. Is there anything further that you see?
Well, actually, we've been putting in some thought and actually doing a whole lot of listening to our customers.
Okay.
And by 2025, we see two broad needs for supporting customers with intelligent automation, especially on AWS. First, businesses will need to rent a digital workforce. That is becoming more and more apparent. And it is not just, casually naming something and then saying it's a digital workforce. It's literally renting a digital workforce, which can be configured on demand from a catalog. So imagine just going over, configuring a Ganesh or a John or a Jill, and they are able to actually carry out purchase order processing or invoice processing, et cetera. And you're not necessarily pulling together a DevOps environment for this. This is on-demand renting, right? Literally, you can do that on your browser, and it'll be supported by established RPA and software vendors, where there will be specific use cases that incorporate artificial intelligence AI services natively or through cloud application programmer interfaces, right? So the APIs could be calling these services, et cetera. And it is not just the AI context for this. The point is that you are renting a Ganesh to go and do your purchase order processing. And that is it.
Okay.
And so that is one of the modes we see this need evolving by 2025. The second thing is basically where lines of business have specialized custom requirements. And AWS customers, right, will be able to both assemble as well as deploy on-demand intelligent automation workflows, starting from microflows.
Mm-hmm.
So these component workflows, right, these are component workflows, these microflows within their private cloud catalog. So customers have their private cloud catalog, and they basically have these microflows, and they can do this on-demand assembly, which will be supported by combining the 200-plus features that are available today within a portfolio of AWS curated open and possibly premium workflows, right? So bottom line there is that is a community of folks, right, both external as well as AWS driven, which basically help the customers assemble their use cases 80% of the time within 5 days, right? 90% of the time within 10 days. And that we call on-demand assembly. So you got on-demand renting and on-demand assembly.
Right.
And these are, I think, two basic needs that our customers need to be supported by. And it is very exciting to work towards that particular vision.
So Madhu, having gone through the automation programs that you have at multiple places, what do you think are the three best practices that people can follow for anyone starting out right now?
So Nandan, we keep hearing from customers all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the one question that comes up all the time, right, is how can you accelerate time to results while minimizing technical debt? And basically, the first, right, best practice associated with that is to assess your process pain points. So today, people actually start out by doing point solutions, which is perfectly fine. But at the end of the day, Nandan, mm-hmm. you need to be able to assess the process pain points, take the process end to end, and actually have the machine let you know what are the happy parts in the process, business process, right? Whether it's on-premise, including the edge, and on the cloud, irrespective of where it's running, what are those bottlenecks, et cetera. So assessing becomes a very important best practice.
Right.
And there are technologies, as you know, obviously available to customers to actually try and do that in a very quick fashion. The next piece is assembling. And assembly can be just out of the box, but most of the times, even out of the box ends up becoming a bespoke implementation by dragging and dropping. And AWS Marketplace, for example, we have a bunch of solutions that allow us to actually allow for that assembly of those bespoke implementations. And the best practice around assembly is around what I would call microflows. Mm-hmm. That is around component flows where you as a customer have built up these component pieces. And instead of building a giant flow from end to end, you're really only assembling. You're not building, you're assembling, pulling together things, dragging and dropping, clicking and connecting.
Right.
And very, very quickly, you're creating that flow. And that flow automatically is able to be scalable up and down. It's automatically has all the security reliability features that the cloud provides you. Right. And that is kind of very, very important, that ability to assemble and focus on that, which means that as a customer, a best practice is to really plan out what your microflow components are going to be and have that governed by IT, right? So it can be citizen development, but within the context of IT governance. So that is definitely a best practice. And finally, the automation itself, the process execution, right, of these workflows, that itself has a bunch of best practices associated with this. And what you'll find is the whole monitoring aspect of this, i.e. not just creating a dashboard, but we talked a little bit about KPIs driving things earlier, right? So the whole idea that the dashboard is really a proxy for meeting a business KPI and recognizing that at the end of the day, it's that business KPI, that customer satisfaction eventually that we are trying to drive. The fact that we are trying to drive a certain level of adoption, maybe. The fact that we are trying to drive a certain level of defects down in terms of assembly line things, you know, whatever be the process, being able to monitor and being able to report on that in real time and immediately act on it, right? So that you go back all the way back into your assess portion, that is important. So in other words, automation cannot simply be, we deploy that workflow and that workflow is continuing to work out there. It has to be kind of linked back to the assessment piece all over again. And so being able to complete that journey and connect automation back into assessment is important. So assess, assemble, automate, and assess again, right? That circle is very important. And I think if customers, continue to focus on those three things, they will see tremendous benefits accruing from intelligent automation on AWS. And that's what we are observing today.
So assess, rent bots if needed, assemble microflows, have KPIs, keep tracking, monitoring, and keep that going continuously in a loop. With that, let's close it here. So before we go, Madhu, can you tell us where people can find you?
Yeah, surely. So current AWS customers worldwide, they can contact their AWS account execs who can help them reach out to our IA team and definitely myself. Outside of that, I am on LinkedIn and always welcome diverse conversations and really enjoy, anything related to intelligent automation. Love to have a chat. And again, thank you very much, Nandan, for having us on this podcast.
Yeah, thank you, Madhu. Thank you for spending time with us today. And it was an exciting conversation.
Thanks, Nandan.
Thank you for joining the Bot Nirvana podcast. Appreciate if you can leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. Catch the show notes on botnirvana.org. While you're there, feel free to explore more automation ideas, tutorials, tools, and more. See you next time.